Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 738, and we're recording it on Thursday morning, November 21st, 2024. I'm Martin Spriggs, and you've tuned into a show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. Joining me at that intersection, as usual, from North Mankato, Minnesota, snowy North Mankato, Minnesota, Sally Draper. Hello, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Happy to be joining you today. It is a bit white outside my window, so We've enjoyed a really warm fall, and now the cooler temperatures have definitely arrived. So yeah,
those in the Minnesota and Wisconsin, I don't know if Minnesota got it as the same, but last year about this time, we had a couple feet of snow almost, it seemed like, maybe a foot and a half. I maybe exaggerate, but heavy, backbreaking, boy, winter's slapping you in the face. I'm here kind of greeting. So I'm glad this is not going to be that. But I don't mind winter as long as it's, we've got shelter, which we all do. So joining us on the show today from different parts, one over toward you, Sally, Rachel Feld in New Ulm, Minnesota. Professor Rachel Feld. How are you, Rachel?
I am doing just great, Martin. Happy to be here.
Love
and
your
talk
background.
To you today.
Love it. Very festive. It goes right along with the weather we're getting. So thanks for being here once again. And Jason Schmidt from, we've debated this before if we call this up north or not, but I call it up north.
Okay, so I would say since I'm south of Highway 29 now, we are not up north.
Kind of the line
I think that's
demarcation.
The dividing line. So yeah, beautiful sunny Oshkosh, Wisconsin, which is like the mecca of all things aviation. So, it's a good place to be.
Yeah, and snow.
Aviation and overalls. I think that should
that's
be our
what
new
I was
city
thinking.
Slogan.
Aviation and overalls. I think we have a show title. I like it. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Excited to be here.
As our longtime or short-time listeners probably know, when we have Jason and Rachel, we talk about educational technology. And we've been kind of pointing ourselves at a series and focusing on a technology integration framework, which is quite popular and a great subject for our conversation, called SAMR, or substitution, and I only know this because it's right in front of me, substitution, augmentation, modification, redefinition. Maybe before we jump into our discussion, somebody on the podcast here today can give us the high level. Why do we have a technology integration framework, and why is this one useful?
Rachel, do you want to take it, or do you want me to take this one?
Everybody's taking two steps back. Yeah.
Happy to. Yeah, so tech integration frameworks are really helpful in that they give the faculty a shared vocabulary as far as how they're talking about using technology, and also gives them a shared perspective as how the different ways that they can use technology in the classroom. SAMR is the first technology integration framework I actually came across. And I like it because it's pretty simple and easy to understand, and really can, it makes low-level integrations okay, but also gives us a pretty easy goal when we try to get to that modification and redefinition level.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but there is a graduation from step to step. You're going from maybe where somebody might start to hopefully where they might finish. Is that how these frameworks work?
Well, yeah.
Go ahead,
So
Rachel.
I'm going to say yes, and Jason will say no. Awesome. The substitution level, one reason I like it is because it kind of is an easy entry point where we can substitute things that we've already done with some technology things, an easy way to get your feet wet. But it does allow also for, okay, now that we've gotten our feet wet, where can we go next? What are some different things we can do that aren't just substitution? But that also is a challenge of this integration because it's like, oh, I'm integrating because I'm at the substitution level. Good for me. And then we can kind of get stuck there.
Yeah, and I would add to that, so everything that Rachel said, I'm not disagreeing with you at all, Rachel. So that's good. But what I would say is like the goal is not to take everything that we're doing and redefine all of our tasks using the technology. Like really what the goal is for us just to acknowledge the kinds of things that we're doing. And I almost look at this as a way to justify the time investment. So for example, if I'm spending a whole lot of time down at that substitution level, and like I'm using technology basically as a direct replacement for like paper and pencil or things like that, there's something that might be lost in that process. So for example, if my substitution is instead of giving kids physical books, I'm giving them ebooks and they're just reading those electronic books on a screen, is there a benefit to using that substitution as a way of doing things better? Or is it really just like, I'm missing out on the tactile feel of a book in front of me and the ability to flip pages and mark things up and, all of those kinds of things, even the smell of the book, right? Like we haven't figured out how to make an iPad smell like a book. I'm sure it's down there. I'm sure it's coming. Somebody's working on it.
Some kind of
But
scented candle, yeah.
yeah, right. Scented iPad. That's another title, right? Exactly. So, I think like it's just it. This is the way that I use this framework is really around the value proposition of incorporating technology. So, for you to do something at a substitution level takes a certain level of effort. And while it might be a gateway, it gives us an opportunity to challenge the way that people think and the way that people integrate these different tools, to use them in a different way. Because we got to start somewhere, like Rachel said, substitution is an excellent entry point, but then that gives us a framework to push beyond that. Or if we're not, like, if we're okay where we're at, then maybe we need to reevaluate our use of technology in that purpose anyways. So that's kind of how I utilize these frameworks in the work that I do.
Very interesting lead in to our discussion, because we specifically want to hone in on elementary tech integration. I'm thinking kindergartners and first and second graders, and the tech integration that's happening at that level of learning. Are they all at the R's? Or where are we in the spectrum of SAMR in relation to elementary tech integration?
I'm letting Rachel talk. Like I, you
Okay.
know, I just don't want to. Yeah, I just like you go ahead, Rachel. Like, what's our cue here? We've got to have some sort of a strategy for this.
This is Rachel's wheelhouse because that's where she
I
spent a
know.
lot of
Yeah.
her
Well,
formative years of ministry.
it is, but at the same time, I honestly didn't do a ton of tech integration in my classroom. Because it was first and second grade, and tech integration with the little ones is not very easy and is also not always really the best choice. There are a lot more things to focus on in the first and second grade classroom that aren't always just sitting in front of an iPad. I didn't want my kids to be a little, iPad watchers and me just going around and making sure everyone was on the right app. That's not that's not really the point of education didn't fit my lesson objectives. So I like to take teachers back to what are our lesson objectives and where can technology help us do things better than than we could without the technology. And that's really where we need to focus. And I think teachers can get stuck in that substitution. And it's easy to say, you know, I'm using a Google Doc, so it's all good. And really, okay, did you gain anything? What's the point of doing that? And so if I were back in the little kid classroom, I would be looking at where can the technology make the biggest impact for my students? And I think a lot of that centers around giving our students a voice. Even in first and second grade, you know, their writing skills are really, they're still emerging. And that was tricky because they're emerging at some very differing levels. The different reading skills and writing skills were just all over the board. And it was very challenging to make sure I knew all of my students understood. Like I'm thinking, especially like our science and math subjects, you know, if they can't write an answer, how can they share with me what they have learned from the lesson? And I think that's where technology can be very helpful because it can be fairly simple for them to record a quick video or do some voice to text or other things where they can, it gives them a voice but doesn't make the teacher have to sit and assess each one individually because technology can help with that.
Yeah, and I think that's a really easy way to slide into that augmentation piece. When, you know, like if you are not assessing students' writing skills, then how can we use the technology to enable them to demonstrate their learning and reflect on the things that they've learned with outside of that medium, right? So, you know, when it comes to those different subjects, science and social studies, or, you know, when we're doing a Christlight lesson or any of those kinds of things, having students talk about it is often very, like, much more accessible. And if you do it well, like with a, you know, well-structured activity, that really gives kids that clear guidance and direction and the things that they're supposed to do, the output that you'll get from that is incredibly useful when assessing kids' actual knowledge when it comes to some of this content. And that's really the goal of what we're trying to do. So, you know, really focusing in, honing in on those objectives and removing barriers from some of those students that may, you know, they're like Rachel said, you know, you got a first grader that's still an emergent writer. They might have a really hard time writing three sentences on a topic, but what you could do is have them, you know, draw three pictures of things that they learned and then talk about those. Or maybe they're writing their sentences, but then like they don't have to worry about making them perfect. They can just record themselves reading those sentences and talk about the things that they learned. So you get at those with multiple areas. And that's an example of that augmentation, right? So we're still using technology to do the same thing, but we have some sort of an improvement to that process that's allowing us to really get after the objectives. And I think that really that really needs to be a focus for all technology integration, but particularly in elementary. My observation is that teachers have a tendency to use it as like an engagement strategy. So like one of our recurring themes that we talk about here in Oshkosh is technology is not an engagement strategy. So, you know, it really needs to be done in such a way that helps you get after those objectives. And moving up on the SAMR model helps you get towards those things and thinking about these tools in a different way.
Yes.
You made me think, Jason, of my kindergarten, first and second, kindergarten and first grade teacher, one of the ways we learned to write was we wrote in a journal every day. And then I very, very specifically remember, as soon as you were done writing, you went up to the teacher's desk, you stood in line, and you waited to tell the teacher what you wrote, and she would write down what you actually meant. And then, you know, there was always a little discussion of, oh, you meant this, and this is what you wrote. Well, this is why the English language is weird, because the English language is not fun to teach little children to read and write. So it's not taking away the skill of reading and writing. That obviously is important. But if you can do that for, you know, your group of 20, but they can do it without having to stand in line, because that did take a long time. And I did learn a lot of patience standing in line waiting for the teacher. Or I learned how to, you know, just ignore the other kids poking me or whatever. But if the students can, that can be a routine where, okay, I, you know, I write my journal and then I go find an iPad, I take it, I take a picture of it, and then I make a video of what I meant when I wrote that out. You know, that becomes a routine, which students love. And teachers love, because once it's established, it just kind of should work in a hopefully seamless way. But you're gaining so much. I heard some UDL phrases, Universal Design for Learning phrases, and what you were saying, Jason. And I think that's really key here, where we're making it so that, you know, the writing isn't a barrier to students sharing what they know. But they're still able to work on those writing skills, because they are vital to our education.
Yeah, I was going to jump in, and I'm thinking back to our last show when we had Dr. James Karlofsky on from MLC, and he talked about AI and the cell phone being big disruptors. I think that was disruptors of education, I should say. That was more geared toward our upper elementary and high school age students. I would say just holding an iPad up in the classroom is probably a big disruptor with the kindergarten through second grade levels or whatever. So how do you overcome that disruptive nature of integrating technology in at those levels? It seems like chaos could ensue.
Well, another phrase that I'm pretty sure I've said it on the show before, and if I haven't, I'm going to fix that mistake right now. But when it comes to technology use in the classroom, you're going to see, like, technology is one of those great amplifiers of whatever is going on. So if you have poor classroom management, you introduce technology into the mix, and it's going to be incredibly obvious that you have really bad classroom management. Or vice versa, if you're doing some like really amazing things with kids, and you add that technology element, and it's well planned and well designed, it's going to have an amplifying effect on the way that things work. So, you know, the things that we'd be looking for, or the things that we would be encouraging teachers to consider as they're planning for these is, you know, kids thrive on routine. They need to know, like, okay, first I do this, then I do this, then I do this. Like, that's a sign of a very well-managed classroom. So it's really easy to avoid chaos just by having clear expectations up front, and then try to make the tool as simple as possible, rather than trying to do like all of the fancy things that, you know, we can do, like, oh, look at this, we can eliminate the background and we can do this. And, you know, like, there are all of the different components to it that that are really like fun and engaging and interesting, but at the same time, they can be a huge distraction. So, like, keeping kids focused by setting those clear expectations, having those reliable classroom routines is going to be just vital to the success of any kind of technology integration. Because again, if you have poor management without technology, it's going to be even worse when you introduce technology into the mix.
Interesting.
I think it's important too to, this is going to sound bad maybe, but pick the boring apps, you know, pick the ones that don't have all the sounds and the bells and the whistles. And, oh, we can, if you do this many things, you earn like this many points, and then you can get a sticker, and, or you get like food to feed your fish in your aquarium or all that other stuff. keeping it simple to maybe one, maybe two apps to use in your classroom. I've always called like Google Slides my desert island app. I'm pretty sure I could run an entire classroom at any level just using Google Slides because it's so very, very flexible. Another great one for the elementary classroom might be something like Seesaw that does have like it's a lot of flexibility, but you're not giving all those extra things that really students don't need. We need to focus on our lesson objectives. So it may seem weird to use the boring tech, but I completely agree with Jason. Tech is not an engagement strategy at all. And so we don't need it to be super engaging. What should be engaging is the learning and the sharing of your knowledge as a student.
Let me take this a little bit different direction before we move on. And that's because it's coming up in the school my wife teaches at. They just recently ordered tablets for K to one. My wife teaches second grade and they're going to stick with Chromebooks. So the whole keyboarding thing, I've read articles recently about people graduating from even high school with just poor key, they're not ready for the workforce because they've really never mastered the keyboard because it's always touch screen or swiping and so on. Talk a little bit maybe about where keyboarding fits and maybe at what age you should be thinking about that and how you kind of introduce different kinds of input devices. So you've got mouse and keyboard versus a tablet versus smart boards, whatever. Where does that fit in this whole model and how do you wrap your head around what the best practice might be.
Oh, Martin, can of worms.
Huge.
It's a whole
We don't
different
have a
show.
long enough show to get. I'm
Well, I'm going
curious
to
to
cut
hear
you
what
off
Rachel
then.
says. I'm curious to hear what Rachel says about this because we either are going at fisticuffs or we're going to be best friends.
Oh, Jason, we're best friends. What are you
Fisticuffs
talking
would
about? We
be a
are best
better
friends. That's
show.
exactly right. Yeah, we can hang out anytime.
I think anyone who has ever had to get a group of kindergartners or first graders to log in at the same time will say that anything you can do to avoid like typing is preferable. And I think, that's where, again, it comes down to or comes back to your lesson objectives and learning, if we're sitting in a social studies class, I'm going to guess that learning to type is not a lesson objective in social studies. And so that I think it needs to be a separate skill that schools need to really think about, okay, where and when is the best place that we can use that, learn that. I also think back to my brief experience teaching piano and how, the little ones where parents really wanted them to get started because they were so excited. But then their hands were just too small to do anything on the piano. And in some cases, their fingers weren't even strong enough to push down the keys. That is a problem in and of itself. And we're having a lot of students dealing with, poor hand strength or fine motor skills as is. I think working on different hand strength and fine motor skills outside of technology in the younger grades would be preferred. I don't know, maybe third, fourth grade, students do need to learn how to type. Although I would also look at the business world and at what point is typing going to also become something that's a little archaic and everyone just talks to their computers? That's something to consider as well. Jason, we besties?
I don't know. I'll probably wave at you while I'm walking down the street.
Okay.
Rachel kind of got towards like kind of where my philosophy is on typing. To be like just to be blunt about it, I think the only reason that we should teach typing in schools is because that's a component of our standardized testing and like that's just kind of the world that we live in. I don't believe that there's a practical reason outside of that for students to have to learn how to type. And I think, like, when we, if we change our assessment practices or the way that we measure student learning, and that, and we remove that barrier, I'm of the opinion that, like, you just need to be able to use whatever input works best for you. So, you know, like for me, I'm a typer. Like, I like to type. That's just, I like the tactile feel of that. I can do that. I had a teacher approach me not too long ago, who was like, okay, you know, we need to figure out a solution to a problem I have. I'm like, all right, what's the problem? She's like, well, I have my English kids, my English students are writing papers. It's like, okay. And she's like, so this one student, I was talking to her about it, and she said, yeah, I just wrote my whole thing on my phone. And I was like, okay. So what's the what how can I help you problem solve? And she's like, she wrote the paper on her phone. I said, yeah. So like I think what rather than us continuing to perpetuate a system that works well for our generation, we need to be responsive to the kind of environment that these kids are in. And I think, like, workplaces are going to have to catch up. So things like, you know, voice to text, or you know, like that kind of communication, I think is going to continue to be an important thing, that companies are just going to have to understand. Like, that's just something that's a part of doing business. So we're going to have to be accommodating to the way that people work. And then the other part of it too is, like, I didn't really get good at typing until till college. And it was just because, like, I had things that I had to do, and it was convenient for me to do it that way rather than another way. But I think we're heading into a world where, especially with generative AI and some of the capabilities that are there, I don't think we're going to always have keyboards. Like, I think keyboards will always be an option for input, but I don't think it's going to be the default for a lot of people. That's my thought.
Interesting.
So, Martin, you can tell
Wow.
your wife and her school that Jason Schmidt says they don't need to teach typing, and my address is at Rachel's house.
Well, we don't get
That's
a
fine because
ton.
I'll back up.
This show doesn't usually get a lot of controversial feedback, so I'm expecting a little more with this one. I would not today, and this is just today, I would not hire somebody who can't type, because my people need to type, and type well.
So I agree with that, Martin, but I think you're in a business sector where that is an expectation. So people who have worked towards the skills and who have the skills that are of the type that you would hire, have probably recognized
True.
that. There are a lot of other business sectors. So I think that's, you have to look at what am I interested as a, high school student going into. Yeah, if I'm going into tech, I know I'm going to be typing a lot because that's important. If I'm going into fashion design, I'm maybe going to speak my emails to my phone. It's still, I agree with Jason. It's an important skill in some areas, but I don't think it's going to be as important as we go forward.
What about ministry? Teaching, pastoring.
I think it would be a lot faster for some of our pastors to speak their sermons into their computers to get their transcript than to type. I think it's important, and this is another perhaps UDL strategy, to teach students to think about, there are a bunch of different options, right? We can type, we can talk to it, we can, do other things. Which one works best for me? And I think that needs to be more of a focus in our upper grades and high school settings of looking at the different options. You know, same thing with reading. Reading is obviously a very important skill that some people are better at than others. But there are a lot of tools that will, you know, there are audiobooks, there are PDF readers, all sorts of things. I used a PDF reader through a bunch of my dissertation or doctoral work because research articles are hard to read. And I'm a good reader. I used that tool because I knew it would help me comprehend better. So I think our job as teachers is to show them those various tools and say, okay, you need to figure out as a student how your brain works and see which of those tools is going to help you to be most successful in what you're doing. And I know Jason agrees with me.
100%. Yep. Yeah. Again, it comes back to the objective, right? Is the how? Mm-hmm. What is the objective? Is it to communicate clearly? Then, if that's the case, what is the way that I can best do that? Whether that's through typing or dictation or, you know, a visual representation or whatever that is. Like, what is the most effective way for me to get my point across? And then pick the tool appropriate for that.
Which kind of takes us right back to SAMR, right? It kind of puts a name and a process on how you approach your job, what you do, what you don't do, how you think about it, what you call it. Mm-hmm. Good. All right. Sorry I took us out to left field a little bit, but hopefully we can bring it back. And is there anything else that we wanted to cover on this topic today that we skipped? I think we covered a lot of ground.
Mm-hmm. I think we did.
All right. Good. All right. Let's move on. Great discussion. Let's keep it going. Ministry resources is a segment we put in the show, and it is a place where we try and identify things that are going to be helpful to those in ministry. Sally, what did we put in the list this week?
We want to share some things from our colleges of ministry. So first up, I wanted to make note that MLC regularly creates devotional books around Advent and Lenten times. And so I actually have a copy of this book downstairs on my dining room table.
Too.
They've published their 2024 Advent devotional book. Its theme is Glory in His Grasp. Beautiful graphics in it and a devotion, I believe, for each day of December leading up to Christmas. And you can still order a copy of that. We'll have a link in the show notes if you want to have a copy mailed to you if you haven't received one. But you can also get it emailed to you, and the links are all in the same place, or just read it online. If you want to just have it up on your phone or whatever it may be, you can do all the different flavors there. It's like they're communicating in all the ways people like and want to receive. So check it out. And at the same time, while you're at the MLC site, you might want to find the link to their Christmas concerts, which are coming up the weekend of December 7th. Boy, that is just right around the corner as we have waited and waited for Thanksgiving to get here, and then we're going to be heavy into Christmas. So MLC will be celebrating with Christmas concerts on the 7th at 7:30 p.m. and the 8th, Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m. Same concert both times. There will be live streaming. If you can be there in person, absolutely make sure you do, because it's well worth it. Same can be said about Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary. Same weekend, Sunday, December 8th, they will do their concert twice, once at 3 p.m. and once at 7 p.m. And there will be live streaming of that as well. So maybe catch the MLC one Saturday night and the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary one Sunday afternoon. Whatever your pleasure is, it's going to be out there for you to enjoy via streaming as well as in person if you're close enough. So just wanted to make mention of those because those dates are coming up fast.
Excellent. Thank you, Sally.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's that time in the show where we call our picks of the week. And because we've got four contestants today, Willie will have four picks. And these are just kind of things that we've found useful, wanted to share. And we're going to let Rachel lead things off. Rachel, what's got your attention these days?
Well, I tell you, this pick feels a little weird because Jason didn't even try and take it from me. But my pick this week is Apple Notes. And it's kind of a pick by accident. I have used Apple Notes for a long, long time with, just making shopping lists, or I have a list of random home projects that I have shared with my dad so that whenever he comes to visit, he can just kind of knock a few things off the list. But recently, I've been doing interviews with my with for my dissertation, and just by happenstance, I knew I had a voice recorder. You want to record those things. I wanted a backup in case something went awry with the voice recorder, and I just happened to open up Apple Notes and do it right in there. And lo and behold, I discover that Apple Notes makes a complete transcription of the recording, which is amazingly and a little scarily accurate. It does a really nice job. And anyone who has ever had to transcribe interviews or anything like that before knows that that is a very, very tedious process that I was not looking forward to. So just by doing my recordings in Apple Notes, I have saved hours of time listening and typing. So I was very excited to have stumbled upon that particular feature in Apple Notes.
Very nice. And now
Practical.
with Apple Intelligence, I think they're applying some of those goodies to Apple Notes as well. So even more useful. Good deal. Thanks, Rachel. Jason, what do you got?
So, my pick this week is called Google Vids. So, I'll share my screen. I'll just do a real quick. Oh, maybe I won't because I forgot that Zoom does not like me to share my screen. So, we're going to forget about that for right now. So anyways, the so Google Vids is a new tool that's available from Google. It may or may not be generally available. I have like a bunch of things that are like within my account that are different from what everybody else has. So I don't know if it's general availability yet. But if you are a Google for Education customer, you should see it when it becomes available. You should be able to see it in your admin console to be able to turn it on. Essentially, what it is a quick and easy way to build a timeline with thumbnails. Kind of think of it like a mashup between a Screencastify or something like that and Google Slides. So you build out your timeline, you have slides and thumbnails for each different thing, and then you build in transitions, and then you can add background music and stuff like that. Everything is properly licensed and everything, so you don't have to worry about copyright or those pieces. And then if you put a script along with it, you can have an AI generated voice to read that text as part of the video. So, or you can just record yourself and embed that as a little piece of it as well. So, really slick little tool that provides some really, really easy ways to put together some of these kinds of videos. And of course, as any Google tool is, it's also collaborative. So I can share it in real time with other people, have them add things and contribute to the content. So I'll generate a sample and share that with Sally so that can make it into the show notes so you can see kind of what that looks like. And maybe what I'll do is I'll just record the whole process from start to finish. So you'll be able to see what it looks like. So Google Vids, great tool.
So this strikes me as maybe something that an educator could use in a asynchronous learning environment, but also students could use for presentations.
Correct. Yeah. So students could use it for presentations or like, we're talking about again coming back to the SAMR model. This could be a piece like, I want you to create a video with three slides. First slide, I want you to talk about this. Second slide, I want you to talk about this. Third slide, I want you to talk about this. And then just record it real quick, simple and easy. And then it's all web-based, so it's all right there. Teacher can then go back to it. And, if you're using Google Classroom or something like that, it's really easy to go back and review everything. So, but yeah, that's exactly it, Martin. Like it's meant to be a quick, easy, accessible tool for producing these videos.
Nice. I like it. Yeah, this makes a lot of sense. Put those two together in a in a kind of a seamless way. All right. Thanks, Sally.
Well, my pick comes from our friend Matt Miller over at Ditch That Textbook. Yay, Matt. We talk about you all the time on our show. And recently he emailed out an update to an ebook that he has called 101 Practical Ways to Ditch That Textbook. And he has actually done an update to it, and it's on version 4 now. So he is keeping up to date and giving you all kinds of great ideas here just around activities that are interactive and all the different types of tools that are out there that you can use, things you can use to replace worksheets, whatever it may be. So he's got lots of ideas for you if you're looking for inspiration, and it's up to date with the tools that are available now. And he sent that along with a link to his entire suite of free ebooks. And so there's a Google Drive folder that has ebooks on all kinds of things: AI in the classroom, efficient teach toolkit, teaching with TeachFlix, the attention switch student engagement pack, tomorrow glasses teacher resource pack, and others. So if you are interested in tapping into Matt's ebook repository, that's what he shared recently in his newsletter. So I thought I would share this, definitely the 101 practical ways. But then there are many other resources that are here as well. So check it out.
Very nice. Yeah. And these are well done resources too. They've got nice images, and it's kind of an infograph format, easy to digest. Links are always up to date. He puts a lot of time into this stuff. So good. All right. My pick of the week is actually a hardware pick. It is a laptop. I had a need to have a Windows laptop, so I decided that one of the newer ARM-based laptops would be something good to try out. If you're not familiar with what ARM technology is, basically you have Intel, which is what most PCs are and have been for years and years, and ARM technology, which is basically a chip architecture. And Apple has been using that kind of technology with their latest series, which one of the big benefits is battery life. And Dell, the one that the vendor that we normally use in the Senate office, I think has some nice product lines. So I get a lot of questions from the field about what laptops maybe to suggest for teachers, pastors, church office workers, school office workers. And this would be a good candidate for that. The XPS line is especially nice for people who are in either meetings a lot or do travel. It's small, light. Battery life is awesome. About 18 hours you can get on the one that I'm recommending here, the XPS 13. This is the 9345 model, and it's just one of the newer series that supports this ARM architecture. They're fairly reasonable. They start at $900, and that's probably about the price range I suggest schools think about starting at for devices for their staff, for their knowledge workers. It is a tool they spend so much time in. Don't make them struggle with the technology. Spend a little bit that's going to make it last a little bit longer. It's going to make their experience a little bit better. This one actually comes in three different screen types. One is a non-touch, and then two that are touch. Beautiful screen on all of them. The one negative I would say for this laptop is it really only has two ports, two USB-C ports, one on either side, but they are obviously you can use dongles to expand that, but they try and keep it simple. It's a nice, nice looking machine, and we found that Dell is a very reliable company to work with. So that's my pick of the week and my recommendations for congregations or schools looking to put something, if it's not a Chromebook, put something in the hands of their teachers that that is powerful enough to do multimedia and be just kind of a pleasant experience to use. So Dell XPS 9345.
Two ports. Wow,
Two
I
ports.
would struggle. But
Yeah. A lot of people plug them into docks, if especially if they're at a
sure.
desk, you know. So if you're on the road or in a meeting, you really don't need them at all. So, and we're just talking to our laptops now anyway, so who needs ports?
Sure.
Community news and feedback.
A
Next
couple
segment.
things to mention here. Yes. One is from Northwestern Publishing House. We've mentioned before that they've recently started a podcast. They're up to episode 4, and it coincides with something we were talking about on our last show. That's Pastor Andy Frere's book on 364 Days of Thanksgiving. And they actually had Pastor Schreer on the podcast. And he, it says, shares the inspiration behind his book and why being intentionally thankful every day, beyond just the one holiday, helps you see everything God has done for you. So, should be very interesting. I would highly recommend you tune in. And there's links there to the book and different things that he discusses during the podcast. So check that out. This is called Footnotes, I believe. That's the name of their podcast, Faith Footnotes. So, and then finally, want to make mention that the Wells Call Report recently was refreshed, has a brand new look. You can get to it at wells.net/call report. And when you do that, it comes up and allows a different look to the call report than what we've had in the past, as well as the ability to search to see just a particular type of call. So you can filter it just to the pastor calls or teacher calls or staff minister, whatever you're interested in looking up. And then it has the ability to kind of jump down the page to see different people's changes in ministry and things. And there's even a back to the top button that brings you all the way back to the top. If you're like me and you like to scroll the call report, you can get lost in the reams of calls that are available to read about because it's typically a pretty long list these days. And so having more navigation and things is very helpful. There's an archive of this year's call reports there that also behave the same way. And in that action menu, there's actually the ability to download it as a PDF from right there in the action menu. Or if you're on the archive page, there's PDF links there as well. So a big leap forward for our call report. And we just wanted to share that with our Wells Tech listeners.
Yeah, we've had really positive feedback so far, and kudos to all those on the technology team who are involved in it and making that happen, including Sally. And I think this really turned out nicely. So this is a hot ticket item within Wells, and that's fine. It's useful, and it's neat to see how God works and moves and shuffles and, you know, gets people in the right spot for ministry. You know, it's just a testament to the how the Holy Spirit works. So that's kind of what the call report is. All right. I should note that we did have Andy Schreer on our show, episode, I just looked it up, 472 in November. Actually, it'll be November 22nd we did in 2016. So tomorrow will be the 8th anniversary of our Andy Schreer interview. So Andy's a great guy, and that's a great resource too. So thanks for calling that out. All right, that's going to about do it for the show. Want to thank Jason and Rachel for bringing their A games once again and talking about technology, ministry, education, Sammer,
Typing.
keyboards, all that good stuff. So really appreciate it, you guys. Thank you, and blessings on your Thanksgiving coming up here too.
Yep.
And thanks to our listeners. We enjoy doing the show only because you hopefully enjoy listening to it. That's why we do it. So thank you for listening. We will talk to you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.